Hello, everybody. My name is Gay, and I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is October the 23rd, 1985. And thank you, Steve, for those kind words. I don't know. Sometimes I share and I feel God flowing through me, and I just know that God took over. And other times it feels like I can't say anything right, and I don't know. I'm guessing God was there too. I just because God's in charge of all these meetings. My sobriety date is October the 23rd, 1985, and for that I'm truly grateful. I have the honor of having my story in the fourth edition of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's on page 375, and it's called Winner Takes All. I was at a Saturday morning women's meeting here in San Antonio with one of the ladies I sponsor. She was on the Grapevine Committee, and she handed me a packet of information. She said, I think we should write our stories for possible inclusion in the fourth edition. And I didn't want to hurt her feelings, so I wrote my story really, really fast and submitted it. And 3.5 years later, I got a letter that said the fourth edition of the Big Book had been approved, and my story had been selected to be in our book, and which was quite a surprise, because I thought you kind of had to know somebody. And I knew alcoholics, but nobody that, that was making these selections. Although one of the ladies here in San Antonio that I know was on the literature committee, and she was actually one that was reading some of the stories. So we're all connected in so many ways. To go back, I am legally blind. My visual acuity is 20 over 200, which kind of sort of means if I stood 20 feet from an object and you stood 200 feet from an object, we'd see it about the same. I'm also colorblind and real sensitive to lights. My parents, I grew up in a small town here in Texas called Fredericksburg, Texas. It's a little German community. My parents moved to Fredericksburg after the death of their first son. My parents were married their whole lives, 65 years or something, till death do they part. And they only had 3 dates when they got married, and they stayed together through it all. And my dad was in the service. And their first son was killed in a tragic accident. And there was a lot of sadness in the home I grew up in, but there was also a lot of laughter. But I couldn't make sense of that. We were laughing, and yet there seemed to be this sadness going on. So it took years down the road before I could understand what was going on with my parents. And being a good self-centered person, I assumed it was all about me and my handicap, and I was in embarrassment, and I was my parents. I made up stories, and one of the stories I made up is my parents weren't watching my older brother closely enough, so I was their punishment or something like that, because my parents felt so guilty, like they hadn't watched their son well enough. They had stopped at a restaurant after a ball game. They were ordering their food, and the little fellow got up and followed some other kids out of the restaurant, and where he was hit by a car, and my parents held him in their arms. An ambulance was called. They drove to the nearest hospital, where he was pronounced dead on arrival. And, I tell that story because it's the home I grew up in. Tons of laughter, but there was this sadness, tons of laughter and this sadness, and I didn't know how to make sense out of it. My dad was a very angry man. I don't know if it was because of his son's death or I think he had a bad experience in the service or his own childhood. I don't know, but he was very angry. But of course, again, I thought it was all about me. And, that if I was a better person, if I wasn't handicapped, if I was different, then my parents would be happy too. And which, of course, wasn't true, but I didn't know it. I was just a little kid trying to make sense out of life, as they claim children try to do. And I So I made up these stories, but my dad would tell me things like I was stupid and lazy and no good. And probably a lot of that he said when he was drinking, or maybe said it more when he was sober. I don't know. But I took it to heart. You know, it absolutely affected me and changed my attitude and outlook on life. My brother and sister heard the same things. He talked that way to all three of us kids. I had an older sister named Joy. My parents found out that my mom was pregnant shortly after the funeral. And then I was born, and so Joy and Gay, and then I have a younger brother, Happy. So we had Joy, Gay, and Happy, and that's not a true story. I just like to tell it. My sister's name was Joy, and my name is Gay, and my brother we call Bubba. And so being a little kid and, you know, not being able to explain all this stuff, I didn't know how different I was till I went to school. My brother and sister and I kind of just adapted to each other and kind of got along okay, and they knew what I needed to be able to participate in games or whatever we were playing. But when I got to school, I felt so different. You know, I just felt different from everyone else in the school. I was the only one in that little town that I knew of that had a visual impairment, and I didn't like it. But I, too, didn't want anyone to see me sad, so I would do a lot of laughing. When I was about in the third grade, there was a teacher that was knew how to get big my textbooks in big print. So she sent off to the Library of Congress or whatever, and I got my school books in big print, but they were like, it felt like an encyclopedia. I opened up the book, and at first it felt really good to have these big print books, and then kids would make fun of me. And so I closed those books, and I didn't want to ever have to use them again. My pride and ego would not allow me to use the visual aids and the things that were available to me. I was so jealous of my brother and sister and friends around the age of 16 when they got to get their driver's license. And I remember that when my parents told me, you know, Gay, you're never going to be able to drive a car. Well, I was probably about 9 years old, and I didn't think I'd ever really get old enough to worry about that deal. But I just wanted to prove them wrong because they seemed so sad. So I went to the garage. It was a detached garage. I got the keys to the car. I got in the car, and I tried to back the car out of the garage. And I got it wedged in there, and I finally had to go confess. And they hid the keys after that because they were afraid I'd try this little experiment again. I just wanted to know that I could drive too. But when all my friends were getting their driver's license and they still wouldn't let me get mine, I felt so jealous. So I kind of grew up with this, you know, I didn't get my share. My brother and sister got more. Everybody got things I didn't get. And I didn't think that stuff out loud, but I felt it in my heart, you know, that I wasn't good enough. I didn't measure up. Maybe even God knew I was bad, and that's why God had made me handicapped. And, you know, no one knew I was sad. I wouldn't about let anyone know I was sad, but inside I hurt. Outside I was a class clown. I was voted the most humorous speaker in my senior year in a speech class I took. You know, I would laugh on the outside and cry on the inside. Somewhere between the 8th and 9th grade, 7th and 8th grade, right before I was starting high school, I was invited to a party where they had alcohol, and I drank 7 glasses of vodka. And that's probably another lie I tell, because if you're on your 7th glass of vodka, I don't know how you could accurately count anymore. But I don't remember getting home that night. But I remember I remember the ease and comfort that came with that drink. I love the way alcohol made me feel from the get-go. It was amazing. For the first time in my life, I felt comfortable in my own skin. And I woke up the next morning and I had puked. There was stuff in my hair and I had a headache and the room was still spinning and I still felt nauseated. But my first thought is, I want to do that again. I want to do that again and again and again and again. I love the way alcohol made me feel. And I, you know, and being in this little small town in Fredericksburg, you know, weekends were probably the only time I could get alcohol. We'd drag the main street, and then we'd go through this little hamburger stand, and then we'd drag Main Street until we could find someone old enough to buy us alcohol, and then we'd make larger circles around the little town, you know, and get drunk. And I think everybody else was doing that, but I know I was, you know, I couldn't get enough alcohol. I really couldn't. But I graduated at the bottom of my high school class. I graduated 150 out of 152 or something like that. And, you know, I started thinking, like us alcoholics do, you know, if I graduated 150 out of 152, that meant that there was two people that were dumber than me. And then I'd start feeling pretty smart. You know, this is all a disease of perception and how we want to look at life. After I graduated from high school, my parents had this little, you know, belief system that all kids should go to college, or my mom did. So I was sent off to college. I flunked out of college, but I tried it, you know, had my semester, you know, to see how I did. And after that, you know, I didn't know what to do, but there was a program through what was then called the Commission for the Blind that got me a job being the receptionist at an office here in San Antonio, which is where I live now in San Antonio, Texas. And, I worked at their office as a receptionist, and I don't remember what I made, minimum wage, which back there probably was about $5 an hour or something, or maybe it wasn't that much. I don't remember. But I thought, well, this isn't for me. And, so I thought the next best thing for me to do would be to get married. That would make me happy, being married and someone loving me. And so I married a guy I really loved. He was 19 and I was 20 and we got married. And a year and 1 month later, we had our first child, a little boy. And I loved being a mom and I loved being pregnant. And 3.5 years later, I had the same experience with a little girl and I love being pregnant and I love being a mom. I really did. And for a few years there, I didn't drink. My husband and I were living in Houston, Texas, Humble, Texas, a little town north of Houston. Actually, at that time, I was living in Friendswood, and then we moved to Humble, which really doesn't make a whole lot of difference. My sister had gone through a divorce and she moved to that area, Houston area. And to be a good sister, I started going out with her places. And we used to go to this place called Mickey Gillies, and they had beer bus where you paid $5 and then you could drink all you want. It was like heaven, you know, $5 and I could drink as much as I wanted. Still sounds kind of good. I like sobriety better. But anyway, then my sister got a life and she started dating guys and she started meeting people. And from then on, the vast majority of my drinking was done at home alone. I would put my kids to bed earlier than any other kids in the neighborhood because I wanted to be a good mom. And then I'd get drunk. And my husband and I kind of had this little deal that he'd make sure there was enough alcohol in the house so that if he worked late, I could start drinking. And some days he'd forget, and I'd have to walk a mile and a half to the nearest convenience store to get my beer. And the kids would come with me. You know, I wasn't going to leave them home alone because I wanted to be a good mom. So they had to walk 3 miles, which was a lot for a little kid. But for me, it wasn't that bad, but I needed my alcohol and I walked to get it, you know, and, I was, progressively getting more, addicted to the alcohol and more depressed. And the alcohol gradually stopped working, stopped giving me that wonderful feeling. And more it was becoming my problem. What was my solution was now becoming my problem. My daughter had to go into the hospital. And so for several days, I didn't drink because I wanted to be a good mom. I really did. And on the way home, after she was released from the hospital, we stopped to get some Mexican food. And before we got home, I was drunk again. And that night, I remember clearly, I got on my knees and I said, God, either change me or let me die. I don't want to live this way anymore. And the next morning, I picked up the phone and I called Alcoholics Anonymous. They shared, they told me where the nearest meeting was. There was a meeting about a mile and a half away, right next to that convenience store. But I don't know about you, but I think that's a little too much to ask someone to have to walk that far to a AA meeting. But I did it, you know, and I went in and I listened and I heard things that I'd never heard before. And when I left the meeting, this one guy, his name was Frank B., and he gave me a ride home from that meeting. And when he dropped me off at the house, he said, honey, you need to start swallowing your pride instead of swallowing alcohol. And I didn't know what he meant. And there was another lady there that gave me a big book of Alcoholics Anonymous that she had stolen. And I'm still glad we have thieves in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's how I got my first big book. And I went in the house and I opened the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and I started reading it and I opened up a beer and I drank it and I drank and I read the big book and I drank and read the big book. And I started with the stories. They seemed easier to understand for me. And I didn't get any better. So about 6 months later, I figured out what I had missed. I was supposed to have gotten someone to come to my house and do a 12-step call, and then this thing would work. So for the second time, I called Alcoholics Anonymous and asked if they'd send someone over to my house, and they sent two beautiful ladies over to my house. I took them into the bedroom because I didn't want my kids to hear what we were talking about. And one of the ladies picked up my hand and she started patting it and she said, and I started feeling safe. So I started telling her why I drank, that I needed to drink because I was in a bad marriage. And the lady looked at me and she patted my hand and she said, bullshit. And I thought, well, maybe she hadn't heard me right. So I went on with all the reasons why I drink, and she had the same response for everything. And then I got curious. If those aren't the reasons why I'm drinking, then why am I drinking? And they explained to me the disease concept of Alcoholics Anonymous. And when I put alcohol in my body, that I react different than normal people. When I put alcohol in my body, I develop that phenomenon of craving. And when I'm not drinking, I think this time's going to be different. This time's going to be different. And so I started my journey. I got a sponsor and I started working the steps. And in about a year and a half into the program, and my husband and I really weren't doing very good in this marriage. We were just kids when we got married. And I went through a geographical cure and moved back home to mama. And I stayed there a while. And then I ended up moving back, you know, trying to make the decision whether to stay in the marriage or leave. If I knew then what I know now, that story may have had a different ending. I don't know, but I was doing the best I could trying to figure life out. And I remember when I went to Fredericksburg and I celebrated my first year of sobriety in Fredericksburg, Texas. And when I left, I just left. And I didn't even contact the people from AA there that had supported me while I was living in Fredericksburg. So when I went back, I went to making amends. And I remember going to this lady. I said, thank you for sponsoring me while I was here. And I'm sorry I didn't tell you I leave. She said, you didn't have to tell me you left. That's just what we do. We just keep passing on the message that's been given to us. And as I was in these the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and I started working the steps, yeah, miracles started happening. And one of my favorite lines in the book is, some of us try to hold on to our old ideas and the result is nil till we let go. Absolutely. Y'all gave me a chance to rearrange all my thoughts, all my opinions, all, everything I thought I knew, that set aside prayer. You know, God, let me let go of everything I think I know about, it talks about AA, so that I may can remain teachable. You can look up the prayer. But I was teachable, and I wanted to learn a new way to respond, and the lessons I learned are incredible. You know, I learned that I'm not better than, less than, or equal to any other human being. We're just all on our own journey. You know, I went to a retreat when I was a year sober called the Holy Name Retreat Center in Houston, Texas, and there was a lady there, and I was whining and complaining about having to do a four-step. And this lady looked at me and she said, you don't have to do a four-step. You get to do a four-step. You get to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I learned that Alcoholics Anonymous wasn't a punishment. I thought I got here because I was bad. And I realized, you know, y'all taught me that Alcoholics Anonymous is the most precious gift my higher power could possibly give me, where I can learn to live life on life's terms and be comfortable in my own skin. I learned so much about showing up for life. I had to take everything I'd been taught and challenge it. You know, when I got here, you taught me that there's a difference between feeling sorry for myself and feeling my pain. And for the first time in my life, y'all let me cry when life was sad, and you let me laugh when things were good. And I learned how to be authentic, and I learned how to be real. And, you know, that for a little girl like me, when I was young, to go through my visual impairment, not having the support that was available to kids in schools today, that was sad, you know, but my higher power, you know, walked me through it. There's a lot of sad things that happen in life. You know, recently, you know, it's been a couple of years now, my mother died, my father died. You know, I've been to funerals and with people in AA, people outside of AA. There's illnesses, there's stuff going on. But AA never promised me that everything was going to be good, but it did promise me that no matter what happened, I could find a way of getting through life where I didn't have to drink. You know, today I have 36 years of physical sobriety. And I shared earlier at a meeting, and I share frequently because I heard a speaker share at one time, but I probably have 3 hours of emotional sobriety. You know, I have to work on my emotional sobriety if I want to maintain my physical sobriety. The way I work on my emotional sobriety is by working the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, that's what keeps me emotionally centered, so I don't have to grab for a drink again, so I can have a better quality of life than I've ever had before. Life is tough sometimes, you know. After my mother died in 2019, I went on a cruise to Alaska all by myself. I love that Alaska cruise. And I went all by myself, and I just spent some time journaling and connecting with my higher power, just away from everybody, so that I could have celebrate her life and adjust to life without her in it, because she had been in a nursing home in Fredericksburg, and I went twice a week to see her. You know, I remarried in this program. My husband and I, that I'm married to now, have been married 31 years or something like that. Not real good with all that time stuff. But, you know, I can show up for life in a way that I haven't before. I have grandkids today. I had a friend at another meeting that started sending text out. And I thought, at first I thought this, you know, a text every morning from an AA member, you know, and I, you know, is kind of kind of, huh. And then I started waking up in the morning to see if that text was there, you know, that good morning text, you know. And so I started doing that with my kids and grandkids. And not long ago, I got a text from my granddaughter. And she said, Gigi, I love these little texts in the morning. You know, God shows me, my higher power shows me all the time new ways to extend that love. I have a friend in the program that says if you've gone through the 12 steps and you don't know more about love, you've missed the point of the program. But as I, you know, go through these steps, I don't believe I can make it on yesterday's sobriety. I really, really believe I have to keep doing this deal. I knew when I got here that I'd want to do that 12 step. You know, I kind of think the 12 step is where I get my assignments from God, you know, and practice these principles and all my affair. And, you know, but I know I can't do the 12 step if I haven't done this 11th step and connected to my higher power. And I can't do the 11th step and connect to my higher power if I haven't done the rest of the steps, you know. So I get all that stuff that's blocking me from my higher power out of the way, you know. So I, you know, have to do the 10th step on a daily basis to stay current, you know, to what the new stuff that's coming up in my life. And I can't stay current if I've never done it to begin with. So I'm not going to stay current in the 10th step if I haven't done the 9th step and cleaned up my past. And I can't do the 9th step if I haven't done the 8th step to figure out what it is I need to clean up. And I can't do the 8th step if I haven't done the 7th step, being willing to get rid of my character defects so I can look at myself that clearly. And I can't do the 7th step if I haven't done the 6th step and found out what those character defects are that are blocking me from the sunlight of the Spirit. One of the assignments I was given for the 6th step that I really love is, what if I woke up tomorrow morning? What if you woke up tomorrow morning and that whatever it was, that character defect was gone? How would I live? What would I do? How would I respond to life? And, you know, am I really willing? You know, if I woke up tomorrow morning and I wasn't afraid anymore, would I do life differently? If I woke up tomorrow morning and I wasn't full of pride, would I do life differently? You know, I thought that was such a beautiful tool for me to check myself to see if I was really willing. And I can't do that if I haven't done the 5th step and shared, you know, with myself, another person in my higher power, you know, what those character defects are. And I can't share that with someone if I haven't done the 4th step, done the inventory work, taken time to go inside and look at myself, to take honest stock of who's here and what I'm doing. And I don't know why anyone could possibly do a 4th step if they haven't done the 3rd step and connected to this higher power that's going to guide me through this whole process. And why would I need my higher power in the 3rd step if I hadn't done the 2nd step and believe that I'm woohoo and my higher power, you know, can restore me to sanity? And why would I need that if I hadn't done the 1st step and I am powerless over like alcohol in my life, some management? And I started understanding how all these steps fit together for a way of life. And, you know, when I got here, it was that same retreat that I went to about a year sober. And, you know, this lady looked at me and she said, the same lady that said those other things, but she said, don't you understand, Gay? Because of what you've been through, exactly the way you've been through it, you're going to be able to touch someone's life no one else can touch. You know, and that's true for each and every one of us. Because of what you've been through, exactly the way you've been through it, you're going to touch someone's life I can't touch, no one else can touch. I believe my higher power, our higher power, the higher power that exists, AA's higher power, you know, has plans for each and every one of us. Every life is valuable. Every life's important. You know, I just got to figure out what God's plan is for me. And the best way I can do that is to get rid of all that stuff that is blocking me from my higher power. When I got here, you know, I heard we're not bad people trying to get good. We're sick people trying to get better, you know. And today what I believe is that we're perfect people trying to remember the truth about who we are. I believe we're all born, you know, with God's love and perfection. And then we get all these mixed messages growing up and from society. And then we get to AA and we start untangling all of it so that we can be free again, you know, be free to take chances, be free to open up, be free to be authentic, be free to love, to give love and receive love. And, you know, it's just a design for living that I don't know where I'd be today without it. Y'all told me that God could do anything, you know, anything. Miracles could happen. So when my son went to college, I told him the same thing Mama told me, you know, you need to go at least one semester to see if it's for you or not, you know. So when he went to college, I signed up too, and I took 6 9-hours a semester, whatever I could. And in 2001, I graduated magna cum laude. So I'm not college material, but I have a degree. You know, I'm a drunk, but I have 36 years of sobriety. I'm a selfish, self-centered person, but today it's fun to be able to share recovery with other people and to lend a helping hand if I can, when I can, how I can. You know, we hear it said all the time, you know, to give it away. We have to give it away to keep it. But I think when we give it away, we get more. You know, that's incentive. You know, I give it away and I get more and more and more and more. Why wouldn't I want to keep giving? Because I keep getting more, you know. And everything, you know, I've been through, you know, we all go through. I think there's just more to grow and more to learn and more to understand and more to connect and more love and more, more, more. When I got here, there was never enough. There wasn't enough to go around. There was scarcity, and today there's abundance. Sometimes I think AA stands for accept abundance. You know, when I let go of the alcohol, you know, I had the opportunity to open my heart to that abundance. You know, I think it's such a disservice to say that my life is always easy. You can't live this long. I got sober when I was 33 years old. I'm 70 years old now. You can't live that long and not have life happen. You know, like I said, life keeps happening, but this gives me the tools to work through it. You know, when I first got here, I thought, okay, the AA is like God's like a magic genie. You make your wishes and then life comes true, you know. But, you know, if what I got out of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, was something better, you know, because I've been promised that no matter what happens, if I stay connected to my higher power, I can get through it, like I shared before. What a cool deal, you know, where these Zoom meetings exist now, where we get to share all over the world, you know, where we get to go to meetings all over the world, where we get to hear each other and share, you know, AA, you know, instead of getting smaller, just seems to get bigger and just connects us all in amazing ways, you know. What a journey this program has led me on. But the biggest journey is the one in my heart, the one in my mind, the one that, you know, focus on the problem gets bigger. Focus on the solution gets bigger. You know, an attitude of gratitude can change my life. I get to rearrange thoughts and look at it differently. To give you one little example that just popped up in my mind, my granddaughter's my son and his wife got a divorce quite a few years ago, and my granddaughters, who I was so close to, moved from San Antonio to Fredericksburg, Texas. And I was at a meeting complaining. This was maybe 5 6 years ago. Complaining, my granddaughters are moving to Fredericksburg, and this lady walked up to me and she said, "Gay, my grandchildren are moving to Germany." And I, you know, okay, gratitude. They're only 70 miles down the road, you know. just to look at life from gratitude. One day that granddaughter, who's now 22, was in San Antonio with her boyfriend about 3 miles from my house at a restaurant, and they didn't come see me. And my first instinct was self-pity. And then I thought, why should they come see me? They're in love. They're just finding each other, you know. And you know, good that she felt comfortable to tell me, hey, Gigi, I'm in town. We're not going to come by this time. I said, no problem, you know. Today, when those hurt feelings come up, which they can, because I'm human, I have a way to rearrange it. You know, I can rearrange my thoughts the way I rearrange furniture. But sometimes a piece of furniture is too heavy to move, and that's where y'all come in. Y'all help me to rearrange those thoughts. So again, I can approach life with integrity and love and abundance, and there's enough of everything. You know, we have been given such an amazing gift in life to be able to live our lives through the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and to live by spiritual principles, a way to respond to life differently than we ever would have without being given these secrets to life and how it works. You know, I can show up. I can be present to you. I can listen to you. One of the interesting things for me, you know, when my daughter graduated from college, I took her on a cruise to Alaska and to celebrate her graduation. And then a few years later, this is how slow I am. A few years later, it occurred to me, my son's life is just as valuable as my daughter's life. Why didn't he get a trip to Alaska? So I just took him too. I said, I took your sister. Now it's your turn. Let's go. Your life is just, let's celebrate your life too. And when my son and I were sitting by the glaciers, my son said, oh, Mom, I feel insignificant. Look at all of this. And I looked at him and I said, Toby, I feel significant. I am part of all of this. You know, that's what y'all have taught me in Alcoholics Anonymous. I am part of all of this. I am part of my higher powers world, you know, and it's an amazing place to be rather than always separated, isolated, disconnected. I get to be part of Alcoholics Anonymous, part of your lives and you part of mine. I get to be part of my higher powers universe. And that to me was such an amazing concept and a different way to look at life from scarcity to abundance. You know, what a shift. I am teachable today. You know, I am teachable because I can mess up on any day. And, you know, the more I can be willing to grow and learn. And I was at a 5:30 meeting before this one. And the topic was, you know, that the tools and we have to come here and be willing to admit to our innermost selves that we're alcoholic and, you know, and how that can be very uncomfortable to have our, egos smashed and, you know, today it just doesn't hurt so much. You know, I still don't like to make amends and I still don't like to make mistakes and I still don't like to have to look at myself and say, whoops, your character defect really popped up there. But I know the results. The results are so amazing. The results of growth and to return. And every time I go through a 10th step and I learn something new about myself, I'm a little bit freer than I've ever been before. I'm a little bit wiser than I've ever been before. I probably did 100 inventory work on my brother, and because I had a lot of resentments towards him. And each time I did, I remember going to my sponsor and saying, I've already done this. She said, do it again. I said, I've already done it. Do it again. And every time I took the time to do it, even though it felt redundant, each time I changed a nuance and I was a little bit freer than I was before. You know, I can still today get into fear, but I love our fear inventory. you know, I get to go through that, like it talks about in the big book, and I get to challenge that fear and turn it over to my higher power and direct my attention to who my higher power would have me be. I am still a work in progress, you know. I still am teachable. I still want to live by spiritual principles. Sometimes I've used this example of a car that they did test on these cars to see if they were aiming the way they wanted to go. And then sometimes they veered to the right or left, and they were trying to see how much the car actually went the way it was supposed to. I think this was a long time ago where the steering was more, whatever. Would there be more difference than maybe some of the cars today where you just, they kind of drive for you. But I feel like that's kind of like our 10th step. You know, am I talking too much, not enough? Am I not taking responsibility? Am I controlling, doing too much? You know, this program helps me to make sure that I'm aiming the direction I want to go, which is connection to my higher power. I really appreciate y'all inviting me to be here and share my experience, strength, and hope with you. I pray before the meeting that God will talk to each one of you and y'all will hear whatever it is you were supposed to hear. If it's through my voice or a voice from your higher power or that intuition inside, but I believe every day our higher power walks through us and every day we don't have to do this alone. Each day we can do this together. And I am really excited that I got a whole new room of friends that I've never met before. And I'm just sure I'll meet some of you again. Thank you, Stephen, for inviting me here to share my experience, strength, and hope. Love y'all.